We begin today in Galatians chapter 4, verse 8. Galatians chapter 4, let's begin reading in verse 8. Remember, as you look at this section, what Paul has just written about. He has written over a chapter telling these Christians in Galatia that they are children of God, that they are the seed of Abraham, that they are heirs of the promise that God made to Abraham. He's told them that they are children of God just as much as those Jewish Christians were. But these Galatian Christians, by listening to these Judaizing teachers, were going backward and not forward. So Paul is very concerned about these Christians. And at this point in the letter, he shares his feelings with them in the verses that we're about to look at. So let's begin in verse 8, where Paul said, "Howbeit." And that first word stands in contrast to what he's just talked about, because going back into the last four verses of chapter 3, and all these verses in chapter 4, verses 1 through 7, Paul talks about the fact that these Christians are children of God. Now, in light of that, he says in verse 8, "Howbeit, then, when you knew not God, you did service unto them which by nature are no gods." He's going back to the time before they were converted. And he said, at that time, you did not know God. That is, you did not know the true God. Of course, they could have known him because God's existence is declared in nature itself. Romans 1, 20 and 21 talks about people who knew that God existed, but they turned from him. And so the idea of them not knowing God here doesn't mean that they couldn't know that he existed, and perhaps doesn't even mean that they did not know that he existed. The word "know" here probably means that they did not know him intimately. They did not know him by loving him and serving him. He's talking about knowing him in that sense. And so he said, you did service to them which by nature are no gods. The creation itself showed that these pieces of wood and stone that they worshiped were not real gods. How foolish that was, and how foolish that is today. But they worshiped those idols before they were converted. And it was not unusual in New Testament times for people who had served idols to be converted. That may seem strange to us. It may seem like that somebody that does not even believe in God and that has worshiped idols perhaps for years would be converted. But there were many people who were idolaters who were converted. We read about that in the book of 1 Corinthians, chapter 6, 9 through 11, and in 1 Thessalonians, chapter 1, 9 and 10, Paul said that you turn to God from idols. And here in Galatians chapter 4, verse 8, he says that many of these Galatians were superstitious and idolaters before they became Christians. But that was their life before they heard the gospel. They've been converted. They've been baptized into Christ, and they have known the truth. And what Paul is about to say in verse 9 is this: how in the world can you go back to being in bondage after you've come to know the truth? Let's read verse 9. "But now," that's in contrast to verse 8. He says in verse 8, "Howbeit then," that is before you were baptized. But now in verse 9, he says, "But now, after that you have known God," or rather are known of God, "how turn you again to the weak and beggarly elements, whereunto you desire again to be in bondage? You've been forgiven. You've been loosed from a guilty conscience. You have been freed from the fear of displeasing all those gods that you worshiped. You have been set free from having to serve those idols just to keep them from being mad at you and punishing you, and just so that they would bless you. Now, that being the case, how can you turn back to a form of bondage or slavery?" He says now you're turning back to another kind of slavery. He's not saying that they turn back to idolatry here in verse 9, but he is saying that they turn back to a different form of bondage. And that was bondage to these Judaizing preachers and their doctrine. He's saying you're living in the same kind of servile fear of these Judaizing teachers that you had when you were serving those idols. So it's a bondage just in a different form. And he calls that bondage being in subjection to these weak and beggarly elements. Now, that takes you back to verse 3, where Paul said that the Jews themselves, while they were under the law of Moses, were in bondage under the elements of the world. That is, these fundamental, rudimentary principles of the law of Moses, these outward observances and all the other regulations of the law of Moses. Now, he calls that here these weak and beggarly elements. The Bible says that the law of Moses was weak through the flesh, Romans 8, verse 3, because the carnal side of man resists any law of man, but that was even more true under the law of Moses because it had so many regulations. So it was a form of bondage. He calls it beggarly because all those rituals had no power to save these Christians, and yet these Gentiles were making themselves slaves to those observances because of what these Judaizing teachers had taught them. And he gives some examples in verse 10. He said, "You observe days and months and times and years." Now, let me observe here that this passage has nothing to do with celebrating birthdays. It doesn't have anything more to do with celebrating birthdays than it does to indicate that it's somehow wrong to celebrate an anniversary. It has nothing to do with birthdays. It has nothing to do with celebrating national holidays as simply customs or traditions. Those observances are customs. But the observances that he's talking about in verse 10 are religious. And these people thought that they had to do them to be right with God. They thought that they had to observe these things in verse 10 to be saved. These Gentile Christians were observing days, and that refers especially to the Sabbath days. They thought that they had to observe the Sabbath. Now, these Gentiles had never been under the law of Moses, and now all of a sudden, because they're Christians, they're being told that they have to keep the Sabbath days. He says, "You also observe months," and that would refer to the new moon celebration. That was a monthly observance in the law of Moses. The times here that he said they observed would probably be the yearly festivals like Passover and Pentecost and the Feast of Tabernacles. And then he said, "You observe years," and of course that would include things like the Jubilee. Now, all those were Old Testament Mosaic regulations. They have nothing to do with these Christians that he's writing to, and yet these Christians believe that they have to observe these things in order to be saved. And then in verses 11 through 20, Paul talks to these Christians on a personal level. Now, remember, they knew Paul. Paul had been there with him, so they know him personally. Paul is not just writing a letter to people here that he's never met before. They know Paul personally. And so he talks about some personal matters, and he shares some personal feelings and experiences with these people. He reminds them. Beginning in verse 11, he said, "I am afraid of you, lest I have bestowed upon you labor in vain." Paul said, "I am afraid for you. I'm afraid for your condition. I'm afraid about where you're headed." He was amazed that they had changed so quickly. That's what he said in chapter 1, verse 6. So here, Paul says something similar to what he told the Corinthians. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 3, Paul said, "But I fear that you're going to be corrupted." And here Paul said, "I'm afraid, I fear for you Galatian Christians." So when you look at this and you look at the anxiety and the worry that Paul felt over some of these churches, it's no wonder that Paul said in 2 Corinthians 11, verse 28, that one of the burdens that he had to bear in life was the care, and that means the anxiety, the worry of all the churches, churches like the churches of Galatia and the church at Corinth. And so he said, "I'm afraid that I have done all that work there in Galatia for nothing, because you're throwing away the gospel for a different gospel." And then in verse 12, he said, "Brethren, I beseech you, be as I am, for I am as you are. We're all the same. I'm a human being. I'm a Christian just like you are, and I am a man just like you are. You have not injured me at all." What they had done bothered Paul, but it did not injure him. It did not hurt him spiritually. He says in verse 13, "You know how through infirmity of the flesh I preached the gospel unto you at the first." What is he talking about? Well, his weakness in the flesh was probably that thorn in the flesh that he describes in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 7. The Bible says that he was given a thorn in the flesh. So he had a weakness. He had a bodily condition, and in spite of his poor health, he preached the gospel. And he says that I preached the gospel to you, and you saw that infirmity. You saw my health problem. And he says in verse 14, "And my temptation," and that means a trial which was in my flesh, "you despised not." Paul said, you didn't look down on me because of my health problem. You didn't resent me. "My temptation which was in my flesh you despised not, nor rejected, but you received me as an angel of God, even as Jesus Christ." So they could not have treated Paul any better. They weren't embarrassed to be around Paul because he had this health condition. They thought the world of the Apostle Paul. But then Paul says in verse 15, "Where is then the blessedness you spake of? For I bear you record that if it had been possible, you would have plucked out your own eyes and have given them to me." So Paul says, where is the concern that you used to have for me? Before, he said, if it had been possible, you would have given your own eyes to me. Now, some people believe that this indicates that Paul's thorn in the flesh was poor eyesight, and that's possible. But what Paul is saying is this: what has happened? Why have you changed? And of course, that reminds us of what we see about how changeable some of these people were in Galatia as we go back to Acts chapter 14, because in the city of Lystra, which was in Galatia, we find that the people in Lystra thought Paul was a god. They thought that Paul and Barnabas were gods at first, and then after Paul changed their mind about that, they were treated like garbage because the Bible says that they were persuaded by the unbelieving Jews to stone Paul. So they were changeable people. And then in verse 16, Paul asked them a pointed question: "Am I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth?" Now, all too often, the answer to that question is yes. Many people hate a person who tells them the truth. There are some people, perhaps a few, who love somebody that tells them the truth. But there are many people that hate an individual simply because they're told the truth. Ahab hated Micaiah because he said, "He never speaks anything good about me." But Micaiah told him the truth. That's why King Ahab hated him. 1 Kings chapter 22. Jesus told the Jews, "And because I tell you the truth, you believe me not." John 8, verse 45. Herodias hated John the Baptist because John the Baptist told her husband that she and her husband had no right to be married. So when you tell people the truth, some people are going to hate you, and this shows that we shouldn't be shocked about that. In verses 17 and 18, Paul said, "They," that is these Judaizers, "zealously affect you." They zealously seek after you, but not well, not for a good reason, not for the truth. "Yea, they would exclude you," or shut you out, "so that you might affect or seek after them. But it is good to be zealously affected always in a good thing, and not only when I am present with you." These people had changed. They were one way when Paul was with them. They were another way when Paul was not. So in verse 19, Paul said, "My little children, of whom I travail in birth again until Christ be formed in you, I desire to be present with you now and to change my voice, for I stand in doubt of you." So Paul is definitely concerned about these Christians. And remember that he's writing to a group of churches in Galatia. He's not just writing to one congregation. So there are different levels that these people are on. There are different degrees of their condition in the sight of God. Some of these Christians were faithful, but they were weak. Others were drifting, and they were in danger. And some had completely fallen away. But overall, his message is the same, and that is, hold to the gospel of Jesus Christ.